The golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the golden age of radio, Warren Williams stars in Strange Wills and the story of the Mad Concerto. We'll also hear an episode of Incredible But True, and Gene Autry is a guest on the Bill Stern Sports Newsreel from 1947. Stay tuned for the golden age of radio after today's news from NPR on WNKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, Warren Williams stars in Strange Wills and the story of the Mad Concerto. And Gene Autry is a guest on the Bill Stern Sports Newsreel from 1947. Right now, death makes a landing on Incredible But True as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
The two men were Australians, one a pilot, the other an observer. On a morning in the autumn of 1917, they set out in an RE-8 on a reconnaissance flight together with a second plane. 3 hours passed, and then the officer heard the roar of an approaching motor. He stepped out on the field and, shading his eyes from the sun, glanced upward. There was only one plane overhead. He scanned the sky anxiously, but to no avail. The RE-8 was missing. The other plane circled the field, landed, and taxied up to the aerodrome. When the pilot leaped from the cockpit, he found the officer waiting for him.
Trouble?
Oh, not so bad, sir. A couple of Fineys intercepted us on the way back.
But the other men, where are they?
Hanged if I know, sir. When the dogfight was over, we got back on the course. We took it for granted they were right behind us. And so they were, at least for a minute or two.
And then?
Well, they flew into a cloud. They should have come right out again.
What could have happened to them?
I don't know.
By mid-afternoon, a heavy silence settled over the occupants of the airdrome. The grim, almost sullen silence of men who know that two more of their comrades must be reported missing in action.
Well, got to send out a call for replacements.
They may show up yet, sir.
Don't be a fool. Where could they be?
That's just the point, sir. There must be some place. They couldn't have crashed.
They could have if they met another enemy plane.
But there weren't any others. Not between here and the spot we last saw them.
Well, nevertheless, I've...
Wait a moment, sir. Look. Look out there. Isn't that an RE-8?
And so it was. The missing plane, its wings gleaming in the afternoon sunlight, slowly approached the field.
Listen, sir. Can you hear her motor?
No, I can't.
She's flying dead, sir. And that means trouble.
In almost eerie silence, the RE-8 settled slowly toward the earth. She landed smoothly and gracefully, without a jolt, without even a shudder. The men hurried across the field, expecting each moment to see the two Australians climb out of the cockpit. But no one appeared. When the officer reached the side of the plane, he could see its passengers still sitting quiet and motionless in their places.
Where on earth have you... Look at them.
Good Lord, sir. They're dead.
Both of them. What's more, they've been dead for hours.
Medical examination served to corroborate the officer's judgment. The two Australians had died not long after they had last been seen. The plane itself had flown on until it was out of gas. And then it had made a perfect landing on its home field. Where it had been in the interim, what had kept it in the air, whether it was by mere coincidence that it had returned to the aerodrome. All of these things are subjects for speculation. Only one thing is certain, that this is a story which so far has defied explanation. A story incredible but true.
Strange Wills. Stories of strange wills made by strange people, starring the distinguished Hollywood actor Warren William, and featuring Loreen Tuttle and Howard Culver, with the original music of Del Castillo. I devise and bequeath to my heirs the seven deadly sins: pride, envy, hate, jealousy, anger, despair, and greed. And here is Warren William.
These are the stories of strange wills made by strange people. Men and women who defy and defile every moral law of respectability and decency to satisfy a mad desire, to right an imaginary wrong that burns like a raging fire in their shriveled souls. Strange wills are stories based upon actual wills gathered from courts all over the world. Names, places, and time have been changed so that no reflection can fall on any person or persons, living or dead. Only the sin remains. Deadly sins that cry out from the depths of the grave for vengeance.
And now back to Warren William as John Francis O'Connell in The Mad Concerto.
This is the story of a woman who voluntarily became a prisoner of love because of greed. It's not a nice story, quite the contrary. Mad Concerto is the story of a beautiful woman who gave up every feminine and human desire for the power that goes with dollars. 10 million of them. It happened a short while after I'd begun the practice of law in an eastern city on the Atlantic seaboard. I remember I was standing near the window of my office, looking out over the myriad of skyscrapers. Oh, how I craved excitement. How I prayed for one case to pull me away from the small, inconsequential work that is a young lawyer's lot. Perhaps I prayed too hard because... Mr. O'Connell speaking.
Mr. O'Connell, you don't know me personally, but many years ago, I retained your father as my lawyer, and I have every reason to believe that I will find you just as sincere and trustworthy.
Well, thank you, sir.
Don't thank me. I haven't done anything for you yet.
Yes, sir.
Have you a pencil handy?
Yes, sir. Mr...
Then take this address down. 127 Kingsbury Road. Have you got it?
Yes, sir, I have it. 127 Kingsbury Road.
I want you here at 10 o'clock tonight. Come prepared to draw up a last will and testament. My last will and testament. I expect you to live up to every vow of privacy between client and lawyer.
Oh, of course, sir. That goes without saying.
Good. My matter is urgent and, well, let's say, unusual. My name, Mr. O'Connell, is Walker. J.C. Walker. Good day, sir.
Had I heard correctly? Walker? J.C. Walker? No, it couldn't be true. Why, J.C. Walker was one of the richest financiers in America. Retired, he'd lived abroad and had recently come home. Why, my prayer was answered. I was excited. I tried to go back to the ordinary office routine, but the clock on the wall stood still. I'll never forget how long that day lasted. At exactly 7 o'clock, I got into my car and began the long 60-mile trip to the country estate of my client. I was tingling with anticipation.
You can't drive in there, mister. Private property.
I'm looking for 127 Kingsbury Road, Mr. Walker's residence.
What's the name?
O'Connell. John Francis O'Connell, attorney at law.
Oh, yes. Go right in. Mr. Walker is expecting you.
Thank you. I drove up the long driveway and stopped at the Walker Mansion entrance.
Come in, please, Mr. O'Connell. Mr. Walker is waiting for you. He's in his study on the second floor.
Thank you very much. As I entered the door, I stopped. It was like a beautiful dream come true. I mean her, of course. She was sitting at a concert grand piano, completely engrossed in her music. She was exquisite, something out of a picture book. She had a wild, barbarous look, and her blonde hair seemed to keep tempo with the strange, savage music she was playing. As I passed her, she glanced up for just a fleeting moment, and I saw she had brown eyes, eyes that seemed to probe deeply into my soul. She held me with a long and tense look, and then I lowered my eyes and followed the servant up the stairs. Who was this strange creature? This most beautiful, most sensuous of women. Even the scent of her exotic perfume reached out like tentacles of doom and encircled me. Unfortunately, I was to learn later.
Glad you're here, O'Connell. Sit down over here by my desk and go to work.
Thank you, sir. I feel very honored.
Don't be. You may yet rue the day I called you. Drink?
Yes, thank you.
Here's to a momentous night.
And to your health, Mr. Walker.
You gave me a hollow toast, Mr. O'Connell, because my doctor has given me just 2 weeks to settle my affairs and die.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm not unhappy about it. I've made millions, had everything. It's time to let someone else have a chance. Now, here are the bequests I've made. They're all down here on a slip of paper. All but one. And that's what I want to talk to you about. Mr. O'Connell, you saw Nadia playing the piano as you entered, didn't you?
Oh, yes, sir, I did. I think she's very unusual, very lovely, very...
Mr. O'Connell, you're out here to draw a will.
Yes, sir.
O'Connell, I love Nadia. I love her because she is a genius. I recognized her unusual talent from the first day I met her in Vienna almost 9 years ago. I'd read that Nadia Winter was making her debut at the Wilhelmstrasse Theater, and I attended. Yes, and stayed to worship at the throne of genius. Never in my life had I seen such technique, such warmth and feeling. I remember as she was ending her final number. I left the theater before she had taken her final bow and took the liberty of going backstage to make her acquaintance.
Yes?
My card, Miss Winter. I hope you'll pardon this intrusion, but as a sincere lover of music, I could not refrain
from... I'm very thankful for your interest, Mr. Walker. Won't you sit down, please?
Yes, thank you. I won't detain you for more than a moment. Perhaps you'll be made happy with what I have to tell you.
What?
It's simply this. I'm old, retired, rich, and frank.
And you might add, interesting, too, Mr. Walker.
Be that as it may. I want to tell you that your work tonight has impressed me tremendously. So much so that I want to help finance the completion of your musical studies here in Europe. And later I will arrange a series of concerts for you throughout the United States.
Oh, Mr. Walker.
Quite frankly, Miss Winter, I consider you a potential genius. And your talent belongs to all of us.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Walker. I am just a bit confused. All this, it's so unexpected. Of course, I realize only too well that a professional career in music is... long, tedious, and quite expensive as well.
There need not be the slightest objection to my offer, Miss Winter. You may rest assured that your private life will remain your own.
I will consider your offer in the same frankness in which you have given it, Mr. Walker. Please let me think it over for a day or two. I am staying at the Tura House. Call me later in the week, and you've been very, very kind.
As you can surmise, Nadia finally accepted my offer. I engaged the finest teachers for her, both here and abroad. Through the years, I think she grew to love me. Oh, not me personally, perhaps, but rather that innate sense of security that clings to wealth. Yes, Mr. O'Connell, this is a strange love that has borne strange fruit. I intend to perpetuate it. I want to die knowing that she will never love another man, that her every living breath will be devoted to her music and to my memory.
Forgive me, Mr. Walker. I wish to withdraw from the case. Some other attorney...
Nonsense, O'Connell. You're just infatuated with Nadia. All men are. It will pass. Nadia will see to that. Nadia has one weakness. She loves power. Needs it in order to successfully concentrate on her career. I honestly think she would sell her soul for power in order to accomplish her goal. This is my only chance to hold her, and I'm going to do just that, even though it's from my grave. The last bequest in my will, Mr. O'Connell, is one to you for $10 million.
To me? $10 million?
$10 million to be held in trust by you for the use and benefit of Nadia Winter. She is to receive the entire income for the rest of her life, so long as she lives here in this house, alone, and never marries.
But, Mr. Walker, you can't be serious.
On the contrary, I was never more serious. This girl has one of two choices: to live in luxury the rest of her life, enough to satisfy her every whim and aspiration, or to fall in love and lose her genius. What she will ultimately do rests in the lap of the gods and in the green-eyed monster of greed.
The will of James Carlson Walker was duly signed and executed 3 days later. And none too soon, for true to the doctor's prediction, J.C. Walker did not live beyond the following week. Nadja knew nothing of the trust, so I was instructed by the testator to advise her of the fact the day after the funeral. As I was admitted into the Walker residence, Nadja Winter was again at the piano, and her music more emotional, more savage than ever. She didn't hear me enter, and I stood quietly in the darkened shadows of the room as the music swelled to a crescendo.
Oh!
I beg your pardon, Miss Winter. I am Mr. O'Connell, John Francis O'Connell, attorney at law. Mr. Walker asked me to come here and discuss certain business matters with you.
Oh, please sit down, Mr. O'Connell, and pardon me for not hearing you enter. I was lost in, shall we say, a musical thought.
Thank you, Miss Winter.
Please don't be so formal, Mr. O'Connell. Call me Nadja.
Well, it would make me happy to.
Mr. Walker told me just before he died that you would come to see me.
Nadja, Mr. Walker has been exceedingly generous with you.
I don't understand. He was always most kind and considerate.
I don't know if his bequest to you was either kind or considerate, but he was determined that it should be final and absolute.
He was always unusual, Mr. O'Connell. That is what made me love him. I never knew what to expect next.
Nadja, I am trustee over a fund of a considerable amount of money. $10 million, to be exact. You are to receive the entire income from this trust as long as you... Well...
Oh, come, John. It can't be as bad as that.
As long as you live in this house, alone, and never marry.
As long as I live here in this house, alone, and never marry?
Yes, Nadja. But if you prefer to leave or marry, the money is to go to certain charities.
I don't know what to say. Or do. He has made me a prisoner. A prisoner of love. And $10 million to form the bars of my cage. But I want money. I want power more than anything the world or life can offer. And $10 million will get it for me. I'll stay, Mr. O'Connell. Yes, yes, I'll stay. And I'll get everything I want from life. Everything. You wait and see.
Part two of Strange Wills follows in just a moment.
Thank you.
And now back to Mad Concerto and Warren William.
For the first few months, I saw Nadja regularly. She seemed gay and carefree, and her music was light and restful. Then, quite suddenly, I noticed a change. The transition was abrupt. There was a distinct violence in her mood, as if a storm was brewing. I decided to have a serious talk with her for more than one reason.
Oh, John, I don't know what I'd have done without you these last 2 years.
But why must it be for only 2 years, Nadja?
Because that's the way I've taught myself to live. Never to look beyond the horizon. And especially where you're concerned, Mr. Counselor.
Nadja, I came over this afternoon to have a serious talk with you.
Well, darling, haven't you always found me to be a good listener?
Yes, that's the trouble. You listen very dutifully, and very beautifully, too. But somehow I never win my point before this lovely court of law.
You simply won't conform to my pattern of reasoning, will you, John?
No, because it's fallacious, Nadja. Now listen to me for a moment. For 2 years, you've been working over 8 hours a day on nothing but music. You've become a machine. Oh, why won't you...
Give up my inheritance and marry you? You've said it 1,000 times before, haven't you, John?
Yes, I've said it 1,000 times, but only because I love you, Nadja. I've loved you from the very first day I entered this house. I can't believe that your career is more important than a happy marriage, especially when you're forced to live alone. Alone like a prisoner in this house.
I do it from preference only, John. You see, I don't think you understand my temperament. I am an artist. My whole life has been devoted to one principle, to forswear the world for music. Don't think I'm the first to do this. Oh, all the famous composers have sacrificed in one way or another their devotion to create. I am no different. I eat, sleep, and love, to be sure. But never for a moment do I forget why I am here. My music will one day be my monument. Your love for me, my affection for you, must remain secondary and without hope of fulfillment.
But can't you see you've been changing, Nadja, and not for the better?
Oh, John, don't you realize the hopelessness is...
Oh, darling, you're young and beautiful. Your money's a curse that's not only permeated your body, but is affecting your soul. I beg you, let me turn it over to charity. Marry me now, Nadja, before it's too late. Keep your career. I'll do everything in my power to help you reach your goal. Oh, for the love I bear you, Nadja, now, today, let's end this nightmare of horror.
Stop! Stop! I'll not listen to another word! John, I have never really loved a human being. I have not the capabilities. I love only attributes in others. I love James Walker because he represented power, which to me is the greatest thing in life. And you too, John, I have love for your kindness and your understanding. Sometimes I wish that... But it's useless to discuss it further. You are a lawyer retained by my benefactor to carry out the provisions of a trust. I cannot, I will not ask for counsel or advice. My life is mine to do with as I choose. Hereafter, you will mail my check. And I ask you not to come back until I send for you.
I see. I see I'm too late.
Goodbye, Mr. O'Connell.
Goodbye, Nadja. The savage way she turned to the piano horrified me. I left with a heavy heart. Yes, Nadja was losing her battle. Her power had been purchased at the price of freedom and sanity. I rode back to town, deeply depressed. I saw no more of Nadja for many years. 18, to be exact. Her check was mailed regularly, and I'd heard rumors to the effect that she'd entirely withdrawn into herself and permitted no one to enter her home. Even tradesmen were required to leave their wares on the steps. Then, early one winter morning, it must have been round 2 o'clock. Huh? Oh. Hello?
Mr. O'Connell. Mr. O'Connell. This is Nadja, Nadja Winter. Do you remember me?
Oh, Nadja. You haven't once been out of my thoughts these many years.
Come out right away, Mr. O'Connell. I have something of the utmost importance to discuss with you, and I want you to come alone. And please hurry. Please hurry, Mr. O'Connell.
I'll be out there as fast as my car can get me there. In 20 minutes, I'd left the city behind me and was making 60 over ice and snow that begged for caution. In memory, I was reliving the years. The last time I'd seen Nadja, she was young and breathtaking. But greed had been her bedfellow and power her counselor. I wanted to see Nadja again more than anything on earth. I left my car at the gate and trudged through the snowdrifts to the house. As I approached the once beautiful and ornate mansion, I could hardly believe my eyes. The front porch had crumbled. Even the steps had rotted away, leaving gaping holes in the foundation. The windows were broken and the holes stuffed with paper. I climbed up and pushed against the door. It responded grudgingly to my touch. Nadja was at the piano, just where she'd been the last time I'd seen her. An old frayed dressing gown partially covered her gaunt, thin body. Her blonde hair, now streaked with silver, ran riot over her shoulders, looking like a thousand coiled serpents. Suddenly, she turned and looked up at me, and then I saw her eyes. Their soft brown luminousness had turned to stark, cold madness. She held me in her stare, much like a cobra holds its prey. The blood left my face. I was terrified by what I saw.
Sit down, Mr. O'Connell. Things have changed a bit since you were here last, haven't they?
Nadja, I'll call a doctor. You need help. Medical and spiritual help.
No, Mr. O'Connell, I don't need help. I sent for you for a very special reason. As you know, years ago, I gave up the world and its pleasures for money and for power. I wanted money because it gave me a chance to create. I wanted power because it would make the world listen to my music. All these years I've created. My music lies here in these boxes. It will live after me because you are going to publish it. Tonight I am giving my last concert. It is my greatest creation of all. I call it Concerto Finale. And you, Mr. O'Connell, shall be the first to hear it. First, to hear it.
The music started out softly, tenderly. It sounded like the sparkling water of a murmuring brook as it danced lightly along on its way through forest and glen. I imagined it to be the early childhood life of Nadja, when youth was gay and filled with the laughter of crowded childhood. But in the next movement, I noticed a perceptible change. There were flashes of uncontrolled emotion breaking through to disrupt the calm tranquility of the theme. The tempo increased. The chords became discordant. It sounded like the cry of a distressed soul crying out for deliverance. Nadja was looking straight ahead, looking into the darkness and the gloomy shadows of the room. But I knew she was looking far beyond. She was reliving her life. And the poignant sorrows interspersed with happier moments had all been interwoven into this, the bitter end of her musical career. And now she'd entered into the final tragedy of her life. The wild notes shrieked into the room and blended with the moaning of the winter wind. I shuddered. Never had I heard music played like this before. To me, it seemed as if all the diabolical imps from Hades were striking the keys through her fingers. It was the discordant lamentation of the damned. I wiped the perspiration from my forehead in spite of the cold within the room. I must help Nadja and save her music at any cost. Quickly, I formulated a plan. While Nadja was lost in her mad reverie, I'd slip out and phone for medical assistance. I hoped she'd keep playing until I could return. I arose quietly and slipped out of the door and ran down the long snow-covered path to my car. I could still hear Nadja's music as it swept along in its mad theme of abject misery and despair. Just as I was about to enter my car, I heard a dull rumble come from the direction of the house. I looked up. Great soaring fingers of flame were shooting heavenward. The house was on fire.
Even as I hurried back, I knew I was too late. Like something out of Dante's Inferno, this house was becoming the funeral pyre of Nadja and her music. Through the crackling of the flames, I still heard the piano. Nadja was ending her mad concerto. Then, quite suddenly, the whole house collapsed like a tortured soul!
And so ended the mad concerto. A girl genius, the lust for power, and the green-eyed monster of greed. But the sin did not die with Nadja Winter. It lives on in the hearts of men and women, secret and unconquered.
Warren William will be back in just a moment to tell you what the official records say about the probate cause of the Mad Concerto. Again is Warren William.
And the fire? The records simply say fire of unknown origin. Was it accidental? Could it have been a human sacrifice at the pagan altar of greed? Who knows? For greed is the cause of endless suffering. What would have happened to Nadja Winter, I wonder, if she'd been able to live a normal, carefree life and still retain her genius? Perhaps the two are incompatible. I don't know. Do you? Next week, I'm going to tell you the story behind one of the strangest wills ever written. We're all familiar with the splendid results of modern psychiatry. But when you mix a mad, covetous psychiatrist together with a lovely, beautiful woman who has a husband, well, you've got a situation. We call this unusual story Alias Dr. Svengali. This is Warren William inviting you to listen again next week.
Strange Wills is written by Ken Crippeen and directed by Albert Ulrich. This is a Teleways feature produced in Hollywood.
You're listening to The Golden Age of Radio with Strange Wills, starring Warren William. We also heard an episode of Incredible But True. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s. When The Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Right now, Gene Autry is the guest on the Bill Stern Sports Newsreel from 1947. as WMKY presents The Golden Age of Radio.
C-O-L-G-A-T-E, Colgate presents Bill Stern.
With a Colgate Shave Cream sports newsreel.
Bill Stern, the Colgate Shave Cream man, is on the air. Bill Stern, the Colgate Shave Cream man, with stories rare. Take his advice and you'll look keen. You'll get a shave that's smooth and clean. You'll be a Colgate brushless fan.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Bill Stern, bringing you the Colgate sports newsreel. Our guest tonight is the best-known cowboy star in America, Mr. Gene Autry. But first, let's begin with Real One. Ken Strong is the most famous player on the New York Giants championship football team. And Ken Strong recently wrote me that he uses Colgate Brushless Shave Cream, the shave cream of champions, for he wrote,
"Dear Bill, I get used to a rough time on the football field, but I object to it on my face. That's why I like to shave with a light, fluffy cream like Colgate Brushless Shave Cream. It softens my tough whiskers pronto, lets me shave close without any complaint from my tender skin. Thanks, Bill, for putting me wise to this grand brushless shave cream. It's Colgate Brushless for me for life. Signed, Ken Strong."
See, Ken Strong knows how to make a shave behave, and you can too with Colgate Brushless, the shave cream of champions. One, Colgate Brushless is light and fluffy, not heavy or greasy, so it doesn't mat your whiskers down. It holds them up for clean, close cutting. Two, being light and fluffy, Colgate Brushless acts super fast to soften the stubble and keep it soft for smoother, faster shaving. Three, because it is so light, Colgate Brushless goes on faster and comes off cleaner, and it cannot foul your razor. I invite you, try Colgate Brushless Shave Cream. Then, if you're not 100% satisfied that it gives you closer, cleaner, more comfortable shaves, you do this. You send the top of the carton back to me, Bill Stern, care of Colgate, Jersey City, Zone 2, New Jersey, and I'll see that you get double your money back. Go get yourself some Colgate Brushless, the shave cream of champions. It's light, it's right. Try it tonight. Reel 2, portrait of our anniversary. 8 years ago tonight, we began what we thought was a new type of sports show. For it was 8 years ago tonight that we first began this program. And tonight, to celebrate our 8th anniversary, I think it would be appropriate to remember once again the year's outstanding memories. Memories of these past 8 years.
Memories, memories.
Let's begin our anniversary program by going back to our first year, back to 1939, back to when we told a story called The Profile of an Athlete. Back in 1939, on 42nd Street in New York City, in front of a freak show, a barker was shouting,
"Here you are, ladies and gentlemen. See the old amazing freak show, curiosities and monstrosities of the world. And for a special added attraction, see Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great, all for one thin dime, one-tenth of a dollar."
Do you remember who they called Alexander the Great back in 1939? Once he'd been the greatest pitcher in baseball. But in 1939, he was working in a freak show. His name was Grover Cleveland Alexander. Amen. That was our top story of the first year of this program, back in 39. The next year was 1940, and our best story in 1940 was called The Portrait of a Bathing Beauty. This was the story of a bathing beauty contest held in Toronto, Canada. One of the beauties in that contest was a youngster named Cleo Watson. Nobody thought that Cleo Watson had much of a chance, for only the loveliest girls in all of Canada were allowed to enter this contest. And yet Cleo Watson was so beautiful that the judges selected Miss Watson over 100 of the most beautiful girls in Canada. And Cleo Watson might have won that Toronto Bathing Beauty Contest had not somebody discovered that Cleo Watson was a man masquerading as a girl. You see, Cleo Watson's real name was Cliff Watson. He later became one of Toronto's most famous hockey stars, but he isn't remembered because he was a great hockey star. Oh, no. No, Cliff Watson is far better remembered as the man who was almost voted the most beautiful girl in Toronto. Memories of our top story of 1940. The next year was 1941. And to continue our anniversary celebration, our best story in 1941 was a story called The Profile of a Bank Robber. This was the story of an innocent man who years before had helped other men to rob a bank. Being innocent, he didn't know he was helping others to rob a bank. All he knew was that
He had been hired to drive a car, which he did, not knowing that the men he was driving were bank robbers. They were arrested while he, inside of 1 year, he had become the heavyweight champion of the world, for his name was James J. Braddock. Do you remember that story? That was our best in 1941. The next year was 1942, and it was then that we told a strange story, a story called The Profile of a Secret Message. It was during the war, when one night on this program, the United States Secret Service used one of my stories to broadcast a message in code to the Nazis. Let me explain how the United States government did this. 1 week on my program, I had as my guest the former heavyweight champion, Max Baer, who, although I didn't know it, was controlled by the United States Secret Service. Because he was controlled by the United States Secret Service, Max Baer planted in my program a code message to see if the Nazis were listening. To show you how it was done, I'm now going to recreate the interview of 1943 on this program with Max Baer. Listen and see if you can spot the code message. The interview began like this. Good evening, Max. Have you ever fought in Europe?
Yes, Bill. Once before King George and Queen Elizabeth.
I see. And what are your hobbies now, Max?
Model aeroplanes. I've got hundreds of them at sales. From all over, even some new ones from Halifax.
Well, that's interesting. Now, tell me about your last fight. That was part of the interview. But did you notice some of the words in Max Baer's speeches? Queen, Elizabeth, sales, tonight, hundreds, airplanes, Halifax. Seems obvious now, doesn't it? But we remember that those words were buried in long sentences. The Nazis got that message, but the Queen Elizabeth did not sail. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the story of how back in 1942, the United States Secret Service, through Max Baer, used this very program to send a message to the Nazis. Ah, memories. Tonight, on the 8th anniversary of this program, we're traveling back down memory lane, remembering the best stories of each of the past 8 years. The next year would be 1944. And it was in 1944 that we told a story called The Portrait of an Eye. This was the story of a hockey player named Leo Reese. Leo Reese was a great hockey player. He played up in the big leagues. But there was one thing about Leo Reese that made him unusual. He was reported to wear a glass eye. A glass eye that each night before he went to bed, he was rumored to lock up in a safe. One night, some hockey players decided to steal Leo Reese's glass eye, for they thought that without his glass eye, he couldn't play hockey. That's why, late that night, they broke open his safe, stole that glass eye, unaware that attached to the piece of glass was a note that read, "An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. This eye is false, and that's the truth. Fools, my eye is my own with which I see. Whoever steals that will have to steal me." Then and only then did the true story come out. Leo Reese, the hockey player, had never worn a glass eye at all. Ah, that was our best story of 1944. We came next to the year 1945, and the big story of 1945 was the boys coming home from the war. Ah, they were coming from Japan, from Germany, from Italy, from all over. Everywhere, crowds were cheering them home. But wait a minute. Wait a minute. What about the boys who didn't come home? Tommy Hitchcock, America's polo champion. Joe Hunt, America's tennis champion. Charlie Paddock, our former track champion. Yeah, and somebody else. Ah, he wasn't a champion in any sport. And yet he was the greatest champion that sports have ever had. For he was a man of whom the people say, "Sleep well, soldier, you'll never be forgotten." His name was Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Ah, we're almost to the end of the trail now. For the next year was 1946, last year, and our best story of last year was called The Profile of a Man and a Dog. This was the story of a man and a hunting dog. Out in Fort Wayne, Indiana, they've erected a statue in their memory because, you see, strange as it seems, that man once saved that dog's life only to have that dog later save the man's life. the dog's name is unimportant, but the man's name was Abraham Lincoln. Ah, memories. Memories are the best stories we've told each year. Now we're up to this year. The best story of this year is the story of a man who once held an American long-distance swimming record. His name was Fred Fisher. But Fred Fisher's not remembered as the man who set an American swimming record. Oh, no. No, Fred Fisher is far better remembered as the man who wrote this year's most popular song, a song called Peg O' My Heart.
Peg O' My Heart.
That's it, ladies and gentlemen. That brings us completely up to date. Tonight, on the 8th anniversary of this program, we've gone back through the years and retold our best story from each of the past 8 years. Now we begin our 9th year. We begin our 9th year in the hope that you will continue to allow us to come into your homes each Friday evening to keep alive the memories of the great stars, and that on each Friday night, we'll always make our home in your heart for many, many years to come. Thanks so much for the past. Good night, God bless you, and good luck. Portrait of our passing years. Reel 3, Arthur Gary.
So you think a shave cream ought to be heavy and maybe greasy? Brother, what a wonderful surprise you're going to have when you try Colgate Brushless, the shave cream of champions. It's not heavy, not greasy. Colgate Brushless shave cream is light and fluffy, goes on faster, acts fast, gives you a close, clean, no-pull, no-snag performance without after irritation. And at the finish, because Colgate Brushless is not heavy or greasy, it rinses off your razor in your face in a 1-2-3. Enjoy a champion shave tomorrow. Get Colgate Brushless, the shave cream of champions, tonight. It's light and it's right. And now, back to Bill Stern.
Reel 4, Colgate's camera close-up of Gene Autry. Our guest tonight is the most famous cowboy star in America, Gene Autry. He's appearing in New York City with his own famous rodeo. So we switch you now backstage to Madison Square Garden in New York, where the next voice you hear will be the famous cowboy star, Gene Autry.
Howdy, folks. From backstage at Madison Square Garden, where the rodeo's now going full blast, I'd like to pay my tribute to Bill Stern on this 8th anniversary of this program. For on the show each Friday night, I've heard the greatest stars in the business. Orson Welles, Rita Hayworth, Pat O'Brien, Betty Grable, Walter Winchell, Linda Darnell, and many others. And I think I speak for them when I say, keep it up for another 8 years, Bill. Because this program has continually served in an inspiring to our wounded war veterans. For many of the stories Bill Stern tells are stories of men overcoming great handicaps. And that's what some of our wounded veterans must do. But you know, Bill, it's kind of strange that I should be on your anniversary program. For it just so happens that we in the rodeo business are celebrating an anniversary, too. You see, the first rodeo took place exactly 100 years ago this year in Santa Fe, New Mexico. But rodeos have always been close to my heart, for it was a cowboy who gave me my start. A guy I hope will never be forgotten. His name was Will Rogers. Now this is Gene Autry in Madison Square Garden, returning you to Bill Stern.
Thanks so much. Good luck and good night, Gene Autry. And that's the 3-0 mark for tonight. Next week, our guest will be the famous singing star, Hildegard. So be sure and be with us at our usual time each Friday night. Until next Friday night, I'll be seeing you on the screen in the News of the Day newsreel at your favorite Lowe's or Associated Theaters. Now until next Friday night at the very same time with Hildegard, this is Bill Stern wishing you all a good night.
Bill Stern, the Colgate Shave Cream Man, is on his way. Bill Stern, the Colgate Shave Cream Man, had lots to say. He told you chance sports heroes, the inside dope we really know. So listen in next Friday night. C-O-L-G-A-T-E.
The Bill Stern Show tonight came from New York City.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
See them tumbling down. Pledging their love to the ground. Lonely but free I'll be found. Drifting along with a tumbling tumbleweed. Cares of the past are behind. nowhere to go but I find just where the trail will wind, drifting along with the tumbling tumbleweed. I know when night has gone that a new world's born at dawn. I'll keep rolling along. Deep in my heart is a song. Here on the range I belong, drifting along with the tumbling tumbleweed. I'm a roaming cowboy, riding all day long. Tumbleweeds around me sing their lonely song. Nights underneath the prairie moon, I ride along and sing a tune. See them tumbling down, pledging their love to the ground. Lonely but free I'll be bound, drifting along with a tumbling tumbleweed. Cares of the past are behind, nowhere to go but I find just where the trail will wind, drifting along with the tumbling tumbleweed. I know when night has gone that a new world's born at dawn. I'll keep rolling along. Deep in my heart is a song. Here on the range I belong, drifting along with a tumbling tumbleweed.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY. Gene Autry with Tumbling Tumbleweeds from 1935. We also heard the Bill Stern Sports Newsreel from October 10th, 1947. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows. On the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at the same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.